65 degrees Kenosha, 64 Racine, 61 for Burlington, Elkhorn, and Lake Geneva. For WGTD News, I'm Dave McGrath. It's 10 past 8. The morning show with Greg Berg is next.
And we welcome you to the Thursday morning show on WGTD. I'm Gregory Berg. Part one of today's program features a reunion of sorts with Christine Heiser, who is with Root Pike Wynn. And she has worn a number of different hats with Root Pike Wynn over the years. But today, the hat she's going to be wearing is Pollinator Patch Program Manager. Because towards that end, we're going to spend most of the next few minutes talking about a big event that is coming up this Saturday, June 7th. Really a huge free community planting project that is going to be taking place at Washington Park in Kenosha from 11 until 6. And this is an event that Root Pike Wynn and the city of Kenosha hopes lots of people will participate in. It's designed to essentially replace a big track of turf grass with native plants that are going to be much more beneficial to the overall habitat of Washington Park. And in particular, planting native plants that will be supportive of our pollinators, who of course, which need to be supported and encouraged in every way that we can come up with. And this event sounds like so much fun. And beyond the fun is a really important and serious concern about the natural world and that particular environment. So we have a lot to talk about. And Christine Heiser, we welcome you back to the morning show.
Thanks for having me.
Glad we can have this conversation. Tell us first, I touched on the fact that you've worn a lot of different hats with Root Pike Wynn. Give us some sense, at least generally speaking, of the scope of various projects and areas in which you have been active over these last few years.
Yeah, so I was hired on as a stormwater consultant, so mainly focusing on how we can have better stormwater management in new developments on private property. Really a lot of focus on can we use native plants to help soak up stormwater and keep it from getting into our local rivers and ultimately Lake Michigan. And then from there, it expanded to the pollinator patch program, so doing similar project like what's happening at Washington Park at our local schools in Racine and Kenosha. And then that's expanded to working with different churches and private residences and businesses. And then I also help with the Kenosha Regenerative Producers Group that is under Root Pike Wynn as well. And that's focusing on working with our Kenosha County farmers to do more regenerative practices that benefit our water quality.
So you have plenty on your plate, and life is not dull for Christine Heiser. Yeah. Explain what is behind that term pollinator patch program, the pollinator patch. It's a great story.
Yeah, so in southeastern Wisconsin here, the rusty patch bumblebee, which is a federally endangered bumblebee species, it's really kind of the hot pocket for this pollinator in our area. And its range used to be about 80% larger than it is now, but it's really just kind of shrunk down. So back in 2019, before I was on board at Root Pike Wynn, the program got started actually with UW Parkside. And how can we get more pollinator habitat going? So it started off as a large-scale restoration project with their cross-country course, and it was deemed the Pollinator Patch Program. And then when I came on board, we started focusing, how can we do smaller patches but kind of more prevalent throughout the community so more people can kind of interact with these native plants and learn about the pollinator benefits, and then also the great deep root systems that soak up that stormwater.
Right. So we're, in a sense, accomplishing a couple of different
yes.
good things when we are thinking in these terms. And maybe you could just say a quick word about the success that's already been achieved in terms of restoring, at least to some extent, the population of this particular bumblebee.
Yeah. So the rusty patch bumblebee is popping up in many different restoration sites that we've done in the area. And for the first time last summer, I believe it was, the rusty patch actually popped up at Fratt Elementary School in Racine. So not only are these large-scale projects helping, little 500 to 2,000 square feet habitat kind of postage stamps are also providing habitat for this pollinator and other great pollinators too.
So. Sure. And I think probably virtually every single person listening to this broadcast understands on some basic level the important function of pollinators in our natural world. What would be one or two things that you think the average person does not understand or maybe fully appreciate about the significance of having a thriving population of pollinators among us?
Well, the one stat that's always thrown around is 1 in 3 bites of food is from pollination. So if you are big into your veggies and fruits, and we need our pollinators. I also like to always point out the fact that when people think pollinators, they think honeybees. And honeybees are actually from Europe, and they do a great job. We use them for agriculture. But our bumblebees that are natural to the area are actually a little bit even better at pollinating because they're so furry and they do what's called buzz pollination. So they latch on and kind of vibrate, and then more pollen sticks to them with their fluffy little bodies. So
they're built for it better than the typical honeybee.
Yes, and they interact great with our native plants that are here. So the relationship is there. Why not support both of them?
Right. So the presumption was by planting native plants that this particular kind of bumblebee likes, that they will come. You build it, they will come.
Yeah.
And it sounds like, at least for the most part, that has turned out to be the case.
Yes. It just continues to grow, and more people are learning about this bumblebee and looking in their own yards and stuff, too. So it's really kind of expanding awareness as
Very good. And I guess the idea is when we have more of this particular bumblebee, pollination is occurring more efficiently or more extensively? I mean, it's just pollination is happening in a better way?
A little bit of both, yep.
Okay, very good. We're speaking with Kristen Heiser from Root Pike Wynn, and she is, among other things, the manager of the Pollinator Patch Program, and in a sense, the next chapter in this ongoing effort to fortify local populations of this particular bumblebee is a big event that is coming up this Saturday, June 7th, at Washington Park in Kenosha. And I think one thing that might be good for us to clarify before we get into what's happening specifically on Saturday is that this is, if I understand correctly, kind of the lead-off event in what is quite an extensive restoration project for the park as a whole. Can you tell us more about that?
Yeah.
What needs to be restored?
So someday in a perfect world, the stretch of the Pike Creek that flows through Washington Park will be cleaned up. So the banks would be reshaped. There would be better fish passage over that little dam situation that's there. Those are kind of the two main goals. So that way we're reducing, you can see the erosion along the stream banks. And one day we hope to have that cleaned up. We've been working on it for a while, but as you can imagine, you gotta find the funding. So.
Right, exactly. So as part of just kind of the overall effort to restore Washington Park, there is this big free community planting event coming up on Saturday. So in a nutshell, at least, tell our listeners what's going to be happening on Saturday and the extent to which even someone listening to this program can be a part of it.
All right. So anytime between 11 and 6, you can show up, and all families, everybody is welcome, no matter what the age. And we will have the big 14,000 square foot area. If you drive by now, it's been herbicided, so it looks a little ugly at the moment. All the plants will be laid out, and you'll have the option to, there'll be shovels if you want to truly dig the holes and really get into it, or we'll have some areas where the holes are pre-dug and we just need help getting the plants out of the pots and actually into the ground. So even if you can't be crawling around on the ground for a long time, anyone can come and pop in a plant. And then from there, once you participate, you'll get a ticket. You can go get free empanadas from the food truck that'll be there. It's Olano's Empanadas. I hope I'm not butchering the name, but they're always down at the public market. We'll have some music going, and then a variety of different community partners. So the Bumblebee Brigade and Hoy Audubon, Hawthorne Hollow, United Way, Habitat for Humanity. So all these different partners will be there tabling at various times throughout the day, since it is such a long event. And you can stop by their area, kind of learn more about what they're doing for the community, how it's connected to our mission. And we'll have raffles as well. So if you fill out a little survey, I think we landed on like three or four questions, so it's very brief. And then there's a variety of different raffle baskets that we'll be calling off hourly, and they all include a grocery gift card and a gas gift card, plus some other, you know, fun items. So there's things that are practical and things that are fun in each basket.
Wonderful. So for somebody who basically drives past Washington Park there on, I guess it's Washington Road, isn't it? Can this particular patch of ground in which this planting is going to occur, can that be seen from the road, or is it a little further into the park? Where exactly is this patch of 14,000 square feet?
So it's further into the park. If you're thinking, most people know where the pool and the velodrome are, it would be, what is that, south? So you go over the little bridge kind of to the back area where a lot of people sled. It's a big sledding area. So we took that into account when we were planning out the layout so everyone can still sled in the winter as well. Yeah, kind of in the back section of the park.
So tell us a little bit about how this sort of plan got put together in terms of where this should happen, exactly where, and exactly what would be planted and so on.
So we've probably, we've been talking to the Parks Department for this one about for a while, and at least a year ago, we were talking to the Parks Director and kind of pointed out that this low spot is always super soggy in the spring, and it's hard to mow, and there's a ton of grass there already. So we kind of landed on that spot from, it's close to the creek, but also maintenance benefits, because it's hard to mow there, so why not turn that into plants that are going to kind of better support that water absorption and habitat as well.
Right. Is this something... Talk about the partnership between Root Pike Win and the city of Kenosha. And, I mean, were you able to come in and say, this is what we're doing? Or in a sense, were you making suggestions to the city of Kenosha? And do their Parks and Recreation Department or somebody else, do they sign off on this or a go-ahead?
Yeah, so we came in with our ideas. You know, we always have big ideas, and yeah, that's a good place to start. And then we were able to kind of tailor it down to what would work best for the city staff, for our staff, the funding that we have. And this is kind of where we landed. And the city of Kenosha and the Parks Department are just really wonderful partners, and they're very open-minded, and they want what's best for the community, and they understand the vision. So it's been very... very smooth and great working with them, so only have positive things to say.
Fantastic. So what exactly is going to be planted? I mean, native plants that pollinators like, but can you be more specific about exactly? I mean, is there a wide array of different things that are going to be planted?
So there is, and I should have brought my list. I want to say there's a total of 10 species. So I like to keep it smaller so that way, one, maintenance is easier when people are trying to keep it weeded out. And then more so, so we can really kind of recognize and start, here's some good native plants that I can start with and maybe move into my own yard in the future and kind of get people familiar with them.
Sure.
So I know there's little blue stem is the grass. St. John's wort is the one shrub that's going in there because we love that shrub. And as do our pollinators. There's some irises, Monarda or bee balm. So a good variety of stuff that's going to bloom all season. Some asters, some goldenrod, so you can enjoy it May to October.
Fantastic. Once these plants, these native plants, get planted, then what happens? Are they just left to, we hope, flourish? Or are they going to be very sort of specifically and carefully maintained, at least in the short term?
So there will be likely some supplemental watering in this first season, depending on how the rainfall shakes out. You never really know what to expect.
Right.
But, yeah, they're larger size plants for the most part. So they're really kind of set up to rock and roll as soon as they're in. And then we have contracted maintenance, so the same people that did the herbicide, they'll keep an eye on the area. So if any other weeds do kind of pop up, those can be removed early on. If there are some areas that aren't doing well, they'll kind of alert us and we'll solve that problem and be agile, but it should be smooth sailing once they're in.
Great. So how do people end up participating in this? If somebody listening thinks this really sounds like fun, this sounds important, I want to be part of this. What does it mean to be part of this on Saturday?
So we do have a registration that is encouraged just so we can kind of have an idea for numbers. And you can find that through our Facebook or our website. But you can also just show up anytime. Mm. With the more the merrier. And really, it's great to just register in case for some reason the event has to be canceled. We can send you an automatic email. But
right.
So far, weather is looking good and
yeah.
All should go as planned.
Absolutely. Fantastic. And I know, you know, there are certain community groups like Girl Scouts and so on
yeah.
that are invited to be and presumably are going to be taking part in this in a big way. But even if you're not affiliated with any particular group that's received kind of a special invitation, your participation is, of course, very, very welcome. And yes, there will be free food. In fact, I read also on your website that everybody receives a free plant. Is that right?
Oh my gosh, yes, the plant one, take one. I forgot about that. Yes, we have, people are getting purple cone flower. That, so you get to take home your own native plant for your yard as well.
Ah, what a great idea. Great idea. So again, this event, this big free community planting event, is happening in Kenosha's Washington Park this Saturday, June 7th, from 11 until 6. So nearly all day long, as 14,000 square feet of turf grass is replaced with beautiful native plants supporting some of our area pollinators. And of course, the quality of water in the area will also be improved with this effort. And you can go to Root Pike Wind's website, which is rootpikewind.org, to RSVP. But as Christine said, it's also fine if you just show up happily and enthusiastically this Saturday, June 7th, between 11 and 6. Christine Heiser, manager of the Pollinator Patch Program for Root Pike Wind, thank you for joining us today for this part of the morning show. We hope you have a great turnout and a big, wonderful, successful event on Saturday.
Thank you.
You're listening to the Thursday Morning Show on WGTD. I'm Gregory Berg. Part two will be coming up in just a moment. The time is 8:30, and you are listening to the Thursday Morning Show on WGTD. I'm Gregory Berg, and I'm happy to be spending part two of today's program with Doug Johnson, who is conductor of the Bell City Brass Works, and Getty Humphrey, who is president of their board and a member of the French horn section.
That's right.
And we are going to be talking about the next concert of the Bell City Brass Works, which is titled The Music of España. And most people are not going to need too much of an explanation for what is behind that title. And we'll be talking about some of the pieces that are going to be part of the program and actually play one of them at the very end of the program. And we'll be also talking about the group itself and sort of what makes it go, and maybe even touch a little bit on its long 36-year history. Yeah. Doug Johnson, Katie Humphrey, we welcome both of you back to the morning show.
Thank you, Greg.
Appreciate it.
Good to have both of you here. We sort of shunted this into the morning show schedule sort of at the last minute because I missed Katie's initial email about the concert. It came just as the school year at Carthage was finishing up, and I was dropping balls left and right and missing emails. So anyway, but better late than never. I'm glad it worked out for us to have this conversation and to talk about this this exciting program. Remind us, Doug, about this season that essentially is coming to a close, but when it began and what the journey has been.
Yeah, we begin our season with the Brass Works in September, the first week of September on a Wednesday, and do a concert in November, two concerts in December, a concert in March, Memorial Day performance, and then finish the year usually at Union Grove, but this year it's going to be at UW Parkside. There were some issues out at Union Grove at the high school. They're redoing their parking lot, so... Mm. We just needed to move, and it's really great to be able to be back at the Francis Bedford Concert Hall.
It's a beautiful space.
Beautiful space to play in, yes.
Right. So, Katie Humphrey, as a member of the band, you probably appreciate the fact that it is a busy enough season that nobody's chops go to pot. I mean, you are consistently playing.
We're all playing a lot this time of year, for sure.
Yeah.
The summer bands are starting up soon, and... we just get a lot of playing time in, which really helps us all, I think, play better.
Right, when you are, especially when you're brass players,
right.
you don't want months or years to go by without touching the instrument.
No. So right, not if you want to play the whole concert.
No, absolutely.
That's true.
Doug, I know you were on hand, of course, at the outset of the creation of Bell City Brass Works 36 years ago.
Actually, I'm going to have to say 37 because Bill Stearns, who was the member of the band the first year, informed me last night that it was 37 years. He stopped me in the middle of the hallway. I went, oh, okay, Bill, yeah. I was there when they first started it. I did not join the group. I made a couple of rehearsals, and then there was way too many things on my calendar. And then a few years later, I came back and played for 2 years, and then suddenly I became the director, and it was... a lot of fun to be able to work with these people for the last, for me, it's 27 years. I'm not sure exactly.
Explain who actually started the group, who was on the podium for those first performances.
The first performances, the group was run by Jim Mertens, Ed Burglis, Gary King, and Kenny Norman. Kenny Norman and Gary King really took over the direction of the group at the beginning, and eventually they worked their way, after about 4 or 5 years, they went to Mark Eichner and brought him as the conductor and changed it into a full brass band instead of just a big brass ensemble. And in so doing... we have what we have now, which is a British brass band in all style and in all music.
And for the uninitiated, explain what that term really refers to.
Well, a brass band is all brass players. We don't have any woodwinds in the group. The English bands that started this have been in business for over 100 years. And they have bands that are associated with every factory, every city, And have been going on in that direction. It consists of cornets instead of trumpets. They all use cornets because the sound is a little bit more mellow. And then we have an E-flat cornet, which is a really small cornet. And then you add French horns. We use French horns. The British bands use alto horns, which look like a little mini baritone. And then we have baritones, euphonium horns, and we have trombones and tubas, E-flat and a B-flat tuba. So we get two different sets of tubas, one that it's a little bit higher in pitch than the other. And then you add percussion to the mix to allow us to play lots of different music. And so much of the music, the early band literature, was based on British brass band music. The American early band literature came out of the British brass bands, which were very predominant in Europe at that point.
That's a connection that probably doesn't occur to a whole lot of people.
Right.
So you said some 27 years ago or so, you became the director of the Bell City Brass Works after having become a member of it.
Yes, I was a member of it. I had a lot of friends that were involved in it, and I was asked one day if I would like to direct it. I think they weren't sure I was going to take the job because at that time I was at Park High School doing the bands, orchestra, and jazz bands. I also was running the Lighthouse Brigade summer marching band program. And I was in the Racine Symphony, and I was this group and that group and that group. And then they came up and asked me, and I turned around and looked them straight in the face and said, yeah, sure, I'd love to do it.
Just couldn't turn it down.
What's another night?
Absolutely, absolutely. Katie Humphrey, tell us about when you became part of the Bell City Brass Works and what attracted you about the possibility.
Well, I first played with the band in 2001, and that was a part of a tribute concert to Johnny Hemkes, who was a brass instructor for many of us. And he was still living, still doing probably 100 lessons a week or something crazy. He was an amazing instructor who had tireless energy. And I didn't want to miss being a part of that. And I had not played my horn at that point for like 20 years. And so in order to play in that performance, I tracked down a horn. And I played that concert, not well, but I was there with many other alumni from the group. And it was the greatest energy. I mean, I don't know how many people were there, but could it be 100? I mean, it was a huge group.
Right.
It was a great reception afterwards. It was so great to be able to personally acknowledge, you know, his contribution to all of our lives. I mean, he was just a great guy. And so then a few years later, I was living out in East Troy at that time. And a few years later, I had the opportunity to finally have my kids old enough that I could be gone. So I commuted from East Troy to Racine to play in the band. And I can't even tell you what year that was. It was a few years after that that I got involved. And so then I played for several years. Then I moved away for like 3 years, and then I came back. So I felt like the net time is probably somewhere around 20 years. But it's just a group I just thoroughly enjoy. When you're a brass player, you know, it's enjoyable to play in all the other bands, but there's something special about playing with a brass band, and the energy of that is just something that you don't find other places.
Right. I think one of the keys to the success of a group like this, and it's not the only group that achieves this, but it's a really good example, is of finding the right balance between having a good time and achieving excellence. And I think there are a lot of groups that tilt way too far one way or the other. Either it's all about this has got to be good, and it's kind of a grim, intense exercise, or it's let's just get together and have some fun, and if it's good, it's good. If it's bad, it's bad, and you know, with no concern for the quality at all. And to care about both of those things, I think, is really tricky. And it does seem like the Bell City Brass Works is one of those groups where that secret sauce is really achieved.
It's a balance that's hard to achieve, but when you do it, it's so much fun for everyone. We come out of the rehearsals, and people feel good about what they've done. They feel challenged, and they're up to the challenge. They sometimes discover that they can do things they didn't think they could when they first started with the group. And it's just great to see it. And it keeps everybody young, all the way from our youngest players in their 20s to our oldest players in their 90s. And they're coming back every week and playing every single note and enjoying it. Can't wait for the next concert. So it's really great.
And I think we do continue to improve over over the years. And and some of that has been, you know, we were in bar rooms and basements and and all of that. And now we rehearse at Parkside for the last few years, thanks to some sponsorship, Facetti Music, I guess I'll call them out, is initially making that possible for us. And then performing at the Francis Bedford Concert Hall. We play in churches as well, but that was that, I think, in itself has raised our level.
Right, being in Francis Bedford Hall.
Right. Yes, it is. And rehearsing at Parkside, because we have the our percussion section all the time, where before we would only get them in a dress rehearsal. And so having them be a part of our group, I think, strengthens us.
Yes, it
being
does.
In proper facilities to be able to do good rehearsals.
Yeah, the acoustics in the practice room at Parkside and the stage are so much better for us that we have got enough room. When you're practicing in a basement of a church, it is... It's a great space, and I appreciate it tremendously that they allowed us to practice there. But the sound was so different when we finally got on stage that this has made all the difference in the world. And the group, Kate's right, we have almost gone exponentially up in our ability to play. I'm impressed every day with how much this group has improved.
For those of you just joining us, we're talking in this portion of today's morning show with Doug Johnson, the conductor of the Bell City Brassworks, and Katie Humphrey, who is a member of the French Horn Section and president of their board of directors. And we're talking on the eve of their next concert, which finishes out their current season, a concert coming up this Sunday afternoon, June 8th at 3 p.m. in the aforementioned Francis Bedford Concert Hall, an absolutely amazing space both to make music and to experience music. We should talk a bit about Sunday afternoon's program, which is called The Music of España. And I think it's fair to say that I don't know that when we think about Spanish music, then the next thing we think of is a brass band.
No.
so it seems like not exactly an artistic leap, but it's kind of an interesting mix.
Well, the thing about the Spanish music, we don't give it enough credit for the influence Spain has had on this world and how their music and their ideas have spread. I mean, the music, like the Calypso, the first piece that we play is Caribbean music, and it was built off of African chants and the music of Spain, of their rhythms to go with it, and was a celebration of life back then. And it's just, you'd recognize a Calypso piece, you're expecting to hear a steel drum band any second with that. And it really sets a mood, and we have music out in California. We do a piece called Fiesta de la Vida, which was written in support of a band that was out there, a brass band that was out there, and they wrote their music, or he wrote the music, to express all the influences, the Latin influence, the Mexican influences that are involved in the state of California. And it really shows just the celebration of life. It's just a wonderful, complex piece of music, as life is, but all the Spanish influences that make this just a gorgeous country and a gorgeous area to be in, and quite interesting, forward-moving music all the time.
Right.
Then we do a Chuck Mangione piece, which everybody loves. So,
well, and I guess, you know, one of the things you've already touched on and is the that Spanish music is not just music that comes from Spain, but that kind of essential Spanish flavor has been so enticing to all kinds of composers from all kinds of different places.
Right,
so,
right.
For instance, the piece we'll listen to in just a few minutes, the España Orchestral Rhapsody by Emmanuel Chabrier. Chabrier's not Spanish.
No,
but he, like so many French composers, just loved the musical material in Spain and made use of it in really wonderful
ways. When he traveled to Spain, he went to a lot of little cities and was just so impressed with the guitar performances of the dance music, I think it's a Jota, J-O-T-A, that the piece that he based the España on, and he captured Spain better than any Spanish composer did. It was just like he comes back and everybody goes, this just feels so right. So it is amazing how everyone was infected by this love of life that was coming through Spain.
Yeah, and it's certainly irresistible. So there's several things that are fairly well known. I mean, like Malagueña is a very, very well known piece by Ernesto Lacuna. But there are several pieces on this program that do not strike a chord of familiarity with me at all. So tell us a couple of these. Let's call them rarities.
Yeah, well, one of them, one that you know, Amparita Roca, which is done by many bands and has been performed time and time again, is basically a standard in Spain in every city that they play it, by Jaime Texidor. He also wrote a piece called Bonds of Friendship, which the friendship is Armistad. And if you think of Armistad, you have to think of the ship Armistad, which was the ship of friendship, which was what the name of the ship was. But this Bonds of Friendship is another march by him, and it shows a slightly different style, but gives you some, again, that bravado that you can get through a march. We talked about the Children of Sanchez with Chuck Mangione. That's one you're very familiar with. There's a piece on here that we're doing called On with the Motley. Now, I stretched a little bit here to make this Spanish because this is based on Pagliacci, the opera Pagliacci, and this is one of the major tenor solos. But then again, I started thinking about the Mediterranean influence of Spain and I could work my way through the Mediterranean, make my way to Italy to pull this together.
That's right. But not leaping to Bulgaria or something.
No, no.
We're next door neighbor.
Yeah, we're next door neighbor. And it's just a gorgeous E-flat trumpet solo, this high soprano trumpet playing this beautiful tenor aria. And again, here we are doing a brass band, and I'm doing an aria, and we're doing steel drum band music, and we're doing marches, and we're doing a piece called Reverie for Bonita, which is just a composer's idea of a child, a young girl growing up and her dreams and wishes, and you just can feel this free-flowing tribute to growing up as a child and enjoying how the leaves look and how everything else feels.
It's a beautiful ballad.
Yes,
So it kind of underscores how large an umbrella this is. And when we're talking about music either from Spain or inspired by Spain or having a Spanish flavor of one kind or another. Katie Humphrey is one of the members of the band. What kind of a challenge is it to be playing this music and to be trying to achieve this Spanish vitality and color?
It is very challenging. We've played some of these pieces intermixed with other pieces through the years, so some of them are familiar to me. But to have a program that's concentrated on this style of music, I mean, it's been exhausting, honestly. But like we've talked about, that's our growth as a band. Doug is notorious, I should say, for doing things like this to us. But it's wonderful because you find yourself growing as a musician, sharing this collection of music with an audience that you know will feel it. In a special way, there's so many dimensions to this particular collection of music, things that I wasn't particularly exposed to, but the concentration of it in this program has been really inspiring. You know, we went from Irish last concert to this.
There you go.
Kind of a big switch, but that's all good.
I Fantastic.
Mean,
Explain to our listeners who comprises the band. I mean, I think it's 42 members or so.
Right.
Explain kind of who they are or where they come from.
We've got a lot of retired music educators. We've got a lot of people, even if they weren't formal educators, have been involved in music a long time. Like me, I started out as a music major, and then I switched into communications and journalism and everything. But a lot of us come from a pretty good background of music, even if we hadn't played for a little while. Like I said, I had a little break in between. But you've got people of all of these this wide range of ages with a lot of experience. And like I mentioned, too, a lot of us play in a lot of different groups. And so there's a certain level of expertise that's kind of required to be in the band. This isn't a walk-on band that, like a little town municipal band.
This is more
a little step up. People from all different vocations, you know, even if they didn't do it full time, you know, they do other things. We have a fair number of retirees as well, but we've got some younger people coming up that definitely contribute, and we want to encourage all ages, and that's part of the magic too. We've got all these different ages, and
that's a big thing with this band. We do have a wide variety of ages. We have people coming in that, like Katie, who hadn't played for 20 years and then started up and started playing again. But we also have people that are right now teaching in the high schools in the immediate area, middle schools in the immediate area, and people that used to work for LeBlanc and those companies and have come to work, come to play with us. It's just such a really wide variety of people that all music, that music tied them all together and has tied them all together throughout life. And we just have this camaraderie that builds through the ability to make music together. And I can't think of anything that's more fun to do than to make music together. And Greg, I'm sure you know that because of all the
students that you've worked with. I've read books about that,
about how fun it is
to make music together.
And this guy moved to Madison, Stolen, and he commutes back to do this band. I mean,
that says a lot. That really does.
And I'm really happy that you got us in today. But I was informed last night at the rehearsal, oh, by the way, Greg can see us tomorrow morning at 8, and I'm going, it's 10 o'clock, and I'm driving home back to Madison tonight. So turn around, get up this morning, and get back here. But it's so much fun to be here, and it's so important to have people come to hear this concert because this band is great to work with, and you're going to be really impressed with the quality of music.
Absolutely. I can say that from experience, having enjoyed so many performances. I look forward to emceeing your concert this Sunday afternoon at 3 o'clock in Francis Bedford Theater.
And we should mention it's free admission.
Free admission.
And free parking and all of that. But we do a free will offering, but it's voluntary. We just want people to come.
Absolutely. And they should. And Doug, even as you are excited for this concert, I know you're already laying the groundwork for all that's going to be happening in the next season.
Yes, I already have. I'm picking music for throughout the season, for next year's season, and starting to focus in on certain ideas that I want to see happen. Our November concert is going to feature soloists from our band. We're not going to bring in an outside soloist because we've got some extremely talented people in this group that should have the opportunity to listen to them. They play very, very well. And then our March concert we've got worked out, picking out music, and we'll have a scholarship given to certain students for their expertise on their instruments. We have our Christmas concerts already set for the 10th and the 17th of December. Our November 2nd concert, I believe it's November 2nd, is, again, like the first concert of the year. And we're still putting the details together. We were working a few of them out last night at the rehearsal. And all the music should be in the books and ready to rock and roll before we get to August. So
wow.
I'm looking forward to it.
The fun never stops. So,
no, it doesn't. No,
well,
it doesn't.
Appreciate you making the fairly lengthy trip this morning to join us and to join Katie in talking about what promises to be a lovely concert Sunday afternoon, again titled The Music of España. It will be in the Francis Bedford Concert Hall on the campus of the University of Wisconsin Parkside. Free admission, ample parking, lots of reasons to look forward to a concert, plus a beautiful sunny day.
Oh, yes.
So you won't be slogging through rain or anything. Just come and enjoy the sunshine of Spanish music with the Bell City Brass Works. Doug Johnson, Katie Humphrey, great to have both of you here. Thank you so much, and best wishes to you and all the members of the Bell City Brass Works.
Thanks for everything you do. We appreciate it.
And we'll hear the closing bit of Emmanuel Chabrier's España. Actually, I think we'll hear the opening minutes of España, one of the pieces that will be on the program for Sunday afternoon. Taste of Emmanuel Chabrier's wonderful Spanish rhapsody for orchestra called España, one of the pieces that will be on Sunday afternoon's concert of the Bell City Brass Works in Francis Bedford Concert Hall on the campus of the University of Wisconsin Parkside. Tomorrow on the morning show, speaking of UW Parkside, Deborah Karp, who's been on the staff there for a number of years but about to retire, we will be talking with her about her long and interesting career at Parkside, working with the community. Our weather forecast calls for mostly sunny skies. Today, we're headed for a high of 76 degrees, cooler near the lake. A few clouds overnight, but mild conditions with a high of 55. Sunny tomorrow with a high of 73. This is WGTD HD, Kenosha, Racine, Elkhorn.